Good morning. My name is Steve Corey, and this is More Food for Thought. It's meant to complement and expand on food conversations. You're listening to CKVS FM 93.7, the voice of the Shuswap. And as I said, this program is meant to complement food conversations with Warren Bell. We run every second Friday, and he runs every second Friday, so really, you, the listener, get a program every Friday. So how lucky you are. And of course, each program, as this one, it will be repeated the next Monday. So Monday at 5 p.m., this program is repeated, and then again on Thursday at 8 p.m. DeMille's Farm Market sponsors More Food for Thought. So you just have to go to demillesfarmmarket.com to check out their online shopping. And their weekly lunch menu coming up. DeMille's Farm Market on the Trans-Canada Highway in West Salmon Arm. Today's program, our second on food security, discusses the Shuswap Community Teaching Garden. And I have two ladies with me here in the studio. And they were there from the beginning, so I think you're going to find it interesting. Patty Thurston and Ebony Vartle. So what is a teaching garden? And why not just a community garden? I mean, that's what I always visioned. How do you create a teaching garden? I hope to get some answers from those and other questions during this program from my special guests. But first, we're just going to do a little business. One very important point is that the COVID-19 scare has had a devastating effect on food security everywhere, and especially in the Shuswap. And there are those who do not have a safe, sufficient, nutritious, wholesome food supply. Let's face it, they don't have enough quality food, and nowhere is food security more critical than with some of our Indigenous neighbors. Don Morrison is the contact from the Working Group on Indigenous Food Sovereignty. And if you wish to help, please contact her at the Nisqually office in Chase. Now, there's a couple of other things going on. But let's get to my guests. Patty Thurston is the executive director of the Shuswap Family Resource Center. I think it's not, got a different name. What is that new name, Patty?
For the Shuswap Family Center?
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay.
Actually, we just made it a little shorter because it was quite a handle.
Yeah. The Family Resource Center. Okay. And I understand, Patty, you're from the Shuswap. So let's start with you. Tell me just a little bit about your, just where you, I understand, as I said, I've been told you were born here. So tell me a little bit.
I was born in Jasper.
Oh, okay.
But my family's been in Glen Eden since, I think my grandma was there since 1946, and my dad and his siblings grew up here, and the ones that are still with us all still live in Glen Eden. So I was here. I was a blessed human living in Jasper and vacationing and holidaying in Salmon Arm.
So how long did you live in Jasper?
18 years, and then my husband took me to Saskatchewan for 29.
Oh, wow. You went from the big Montangs to the wide prairie.
Learned how to really farm.
Ah, so you've been on a farm.
Yes.
What was it, a mixed farm or was it being?
Yes. We had big farm in Saskatchewan, and our family farm here was mixed and smaller.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, you've got lots to tell us. So let's go on to my other guest, Ebony. Tell me just a little bit about, I know that you are a social worker and that I understand you have a little bit of experience in Nanaimo, but just tell me a little bit about how long you've been here and where you came from.
Hi, I have been in Salmon Arm, I think, going on 8, maybe 9 years. I originally also came from Saskatchewan. I was born in Saskatchewan, but I went to high school in Chase, and then I moved to Vancouver for university. And in that time, I was introduced to the Nanaimo Community Garden Project, and I was really inspired about what they were doing.
Yeah, that's. I want to get to that because, from what I understand, it's kind of. We used the word just before we came on, serendipitous. But let's start by, how did this thing happen? The two of you, I understand, had some sort of a discussion, and there was one other person involved. Let's go back to Patty Thurston, and you tell me how this thing got going.
Well, the very first conversation I had was with John McLeod, and we were talking about food and his passion. We were both very, very tired of crisis food, just providing food to people and wanting to have sustainable food in our community, because we have so much food availability, yet we have so many hungry people, and it just didn't make sense. So that conversation, I just relocated back home at that time, and John, so that was 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, and that was our very first conversation.
Ah, you and John. Well, let's throw his name out there, John McLeod, because I know John, and I love to see him every time I see him because we both try and make the other one laugh, and usually we get a good laugh. So it started in discussions with him, and what was the, how did it go? And
well, we have because we agree with each other. We both thought we were very intelligent people and liked each other, and so and then Ebony. I was blessed to be able to hire Ebony to come into the center. And work, and I was having a conversation with John, and she was having a conversation with someone else, and then her and I ended up having that informal conversation, as we know, create the most impact in our community, and we just started working towards it, and then Leslie came in later down the road with the yep. same passion. So,
you, I saw in some of the information this word dreaming. So we dream a lot,
yes.
And sometimes dreams come true.
Yes,
and I think this might be one of them, and it's an ongoing dream. Well, let's go back to Ebony. You mentioned Nanaimo. Please tell me a little bit about what happened there, and where were you come from? Saskatchewan, you said. Whereabouts?
I was born in Lloydminster.
Lloydminster on the border.
Yeah. I didn't live there very long. I think I moved to BC when I was 6. So I'm not a farmer. Unfortunately, I would love to be a farmer. I love local organic food. I just wanted to learn for myself how to be a farmer.
So you wanted to learn how to be a farmer. So did you... how does this community garden in Nanaimo get involved here? Would you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, I was living in Vancouver, and I had family over on the island. One of my family members over there was my younger sister, Willow, and she is an amazing farmer currently, a beautiful small-scale urban farmer. But she, at the time, was engaged with the Nanaimo Community Garden Project and this food share hub, and when I would go visit, she would take me there. And so on weekends, when I, you know, left the city and all my studies, I got to hang out in this beautiful space with chickens running around and lots of food and people all working together. And her daughter was there. And it was just, it was a beautiful, welcoming environment that provided so much for the community and had so many opportunities without any barriers. It was really, really inspiring how open it was. So that, for me, that was where it started.
Yeah, that's that. It sounds like almost like a little paradise. But let's get back now to, so you've got this experience in Nanaimo, and I'd love to have more time to go into that, because it sounds like that was it a teaching garden as such, or was it just, it was a community garden?
Yeah, it's a teaching garden. They run workshops. So basically, I mean, we modeled in lots of ways our garden on their garden because of that, like the food education, the skill building, the food security, but also just being able to come to gardening without any money, knowledge, tools, or space. And you could start.
That's an inspiration, Ebony, because I think that's what often, a lot of these... they sometimes call them barriers, or people think, I can't afford that, or I don't have the training or the experience. Mm-hmm. Patty, back to you. So you guys were, you and John started talking about this, and then you and Ebony having this discussion, and so you got together. So how did it go from there? What did you decide to do based on what?
Well, the beautiful thing is we completely agreed. I didn't want plots and boxes. I wanted an open community space where everyone gardened together. All food was collected together, planted together, and they did the work. And so that was easy for us to agree on that. And so were you at the workshop with the 2001 Kamloops? They were here at the First United.
No, I didn't.
So, and then we started using their model quite a bit for providing the teaching garden here, as well as as Nanaimo and Sorrento too.
Yeah, yeah.
To bring in this belief that people can work together and have enough food. And then at that time, without the pandemic, the food was going to our community kitchen, which also was for the youth community kitchen, family community kitchen, and the young parent community kitchen. So it was beautiful. I just want to add too that Saskia has given us a grant, and part of that money is going to go to an industrial food dryer for the garden. So we will have that next year. So
my goodness! So you're going to make what is it called? Food leather.
Yes, and dry things for bags of soup, so we can hand them out all winter, like on days.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
That's another way that we're going to get through the winter without. That's a big concern for a lot of people, and they're talking about different kinds of greenhouses. But that's wonderful. Saskia.
Yes, and so, but it's the sustainability is what we're looking for, right? That is the whole thing, is that we'd go up to the garden with our groups, and so many people didn't know what anything was, which, of course, I was blessed my whole life playing in dirt. So it was amazing for me to know that people didn't know what to do with a squash or what a squash was. So that it was a lot of fun in the beginning, for sure. Lonely. Yeah. We need way more volunteers.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, because we're going to. I think what we're going to try and do between the three of us, mainly you two, is decide or discover or dream about how to get more volunteers. And I'm sure there are people out there. I know one in particular who's listening, and I'm going to mention her name, because Melanie Bennett. She's the secretary of the Shuswap Food Action Society, and she was instrumental this last year where I was involved, limited, but I did some, I was there, and to see her, and she's, and also I have to mention, because she's involved right up to her neck in the coldest night of the year.
Yes,
and it's going quite well, I understand, because I just talked to her yesterday or the day before, and they're getting up there. I know my little team is gradually I surpassed my goal.
So is the Family Center.
Yeah,
I challenge every nonprofit out there.
Go ahead, you can take it. You can do a 30-second spot if you want.
That's all I need. I challenge everyone out there to get out there, because most of us got in our cars and complained about the short walk to our vehicle this morning, and we have way too many people who don't even have a house tonight.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, after this today, I'm going down to Food with Friends.
Good.
And you know about it. In fact, a lot of the listener, know about it, because it was my last program 2 weeks ago when I had Chrissy and Monica on talking about Food with Friends and how they are doing something that is critical, essential at this time. So back to our meantime, you're talking about this, and you already mentioned her name, Leslie Gurney. So she's got a plot of land up on North Broadview. And, okay, go ahead.
Well, Steve, I'm going to hand this one over to Ebony, as she was, Leslie actually contacted you, correct?
Well, actually, at the beginning, I remember our conversation, Patty, and you said, oh my gosh, this is totally something we're already talking about. I want you to go to the Food Action Co-op's director's meeting. And it's
great,
you know, it's tomorrow night. You'll totally connect. This is a project that they're already thinking of. So I went down there and I met Jerry and John and Chriselle and Leslie and all these wonderful people with the exact same dream that Patty and I were talking about, and so much passion for local food. And on that first night, I stood outside talking with Leslie Gurney and Chriselle Lefoc after, and we decided that it could happen. Leslie had this acre of organic property she wanted to donate to this project. And Chriselle had, she was a director in charge of the community garden project at that time. So the three of us got together, and with Patty, we started doing funding proposals. We started, you know, engaging the volunteers, the community.
City council.
City council. Mm. We did proposals. They got involved partnering, bringing water on site. And there was just so many people that were just, it felt like they were just waiting for something like that to come together. So it was really lovely.
Yes. Having been there, I'm always blown away by the amount of produce and how you can learn. But you mentioned a couple of names there that I think bear repeating. Jerry Paquette, I'll even put in a little plug for his book, Eat to Save Your Life. I have a copy at home. And Jerry is all about food and nutrition, and I hope to get maybe him in here at some point. Maybe he can run this thing as his own program again. I don't know. I know he's very busy doing a lot of photography. So if you're listening, Jerry, be healthy and take care. You also mentioned Chriselle LaFlache, is it, or LaFlache?
You know, honestly, we might have to ask her.
Yeah, but anyway, she's with
the, I always called her Chris.
Yeah, okay. I just got it written down here, so I'm trying to pronounce it properly. Chriselle LaFlache, she's with the CSRD, I understand.
Yeah, I believe that's
true. And then Leslie Gurney has the land, but I was told that the land has changed hands.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so that's another area. But boy, you mentioned a whole bunch of things. I want to get to this. This is getting more and more interesting. I'm going to put a little plug in for this radio station because Saskia was there for us way back in the beginning when we needed funding for startup. And Saskia was very generous. So they are part of this community.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So grant writing, funding, grant writing is Ebony's specialty. I do it because I have to. she finds pleasure in it. So she secured one of the first grants with Evergreen, which was Walmart.
It was a partnership grant, a green grant with Walmart Evergreen.
And that was our startup fees of $10,000, right?
Yeah.
And then money was trickling in. Greg Kylo provided $7,000 towards the garden in the beginning as well.
Was that through the provincial government?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. I like Craig. I know Greg.
He was our neighbor back then.
He's a great guy. You know, and give him credit. He got the money.
Yes,
That's what's important. Yeah, so that's some of the funding. Anything else on the funding side?
Who's some of the other big funders?
We had the Shuswap Community Foundation.
Yes,
we had Saskia. We had lots of private donations.
Yes.
But we had the big pieces, because our garden was communally worked, there was this constant need to water. And also because we wanted to be environmentally sensitive, we wanted a drip system water, so we weren't losing any water with these overhead sprinklers. And so Community Foundation gave us money to ensure that we could supply that, and we did.
The Shuswap Community Foundation.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity and the honor to interview them on this program. And when I now sometimes receive their annual report, and you see the number of different, what would you call them, Patty, organizations they've got in there that specifically some of their objectives or for things like this.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're very generous and very, but you mentioned a drip system. Tell me a little bit more about that, Ebony. I've seen it, and it's kind of neat because you can move those hoses out of the way when you want to, let's say you're planting something, you want your rows. So go ahead, tell me a little bit more about the drip system.
Well, the drip system is sort of designed so that you are being most sensitive to, you know, water conservation and all of those things. But what was beautiful about them was it just constantly drips. So you're not up there hand watering. You're not doing overhead sprinklers, which, you know, are a bit hard on the environment. And you can move them around, like you said, based on your garden design. So our master gardener, Chris Guyver, would you know, worked tirelessly. He really did. But he would, you know, develop this seasonal design, and then we would get the water lines put where they needed to go, and they could be on a timer, and it was the most efficient way to go, for sure.
Yeah, that drip system, if I could install it at my place, I would too, because I have a garden. I don't know in whether it would work, but it sure works there. And then let's talk for a moment a bit about the city of Salmon Arm, because you had to get water in there. Mm-hmm. And I understand when you first started, it wasn't quite enough, or is that?
Yeah, it wasn't really.
We had quite a few meetings, but it came together, and Ebony and Leslie did presentations to the city. I got to watch.
Yeah, our big challenge was we had this plot of land, but we didn't have a water source. Leslie's property didn't have enough, you know, to run two different systems. So the city partnered and brought water under the road, piped it under the road, and gave us our own meter and our own water source to run on
now
that
site. That's not cheap.
No.
And that is in, it's almost incredible. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you've got two water sources, sort of, because Leslie is supplying some. And the city, the other, or are you just straight on the city water now?
We were straight on the city.
City, yeah. Okay.
You and could you never use that.
I know we run about four, I can't remember how many, four different hoses running off this one. It's kind of neat. It looks, in some ways, it looks like a, what would you call it, Ebony? It looks like a...
It's like a robotic water monster.
Yeah.
An octopus.
Yeah. Haywire and chewing gum. It's an expression in French that jumped into my mind, and that's why I thought about it. But it works.
Yes, it does.
That's what counts. It really works. So now let's go back to, you know, you got this garden, you've got a plot, you've got some funding. Now, meanwhile, I understand Patty was developing these programs. So tell me a little bit about that. What kind of programs? Tell me.
Well, we always have had a community kitchen up until this year. We are going to move towards food kits, I think, as soon as we can. But right now, there's no community kitchens. But before, we had every Friday morning and Wednesday afternoons for kids. What was unique about our community kitchen, everyone could bring their kids. So this place, especially in our old building where Domino's is now, which we sold to, that little basement kitchen would be packed with babies and moms and toddlers and noise. The building smelled amazing. Fridays were almost torture to be at the center if you hadn't eaten breakfast, I'll tell you. And everything was garden to plate. So if we were making tacos, the tortilla shells were made from scratch. We taught the basics, right? That was the whole thing, is that food doesn't have to be bought in a package or with a barcode, right? And like I was saying, I'm amazed at how many people didn't have the privilege of having dirt to play with growing up and understanding that.
Yeah, if you come from the city, a lot of the time you don't see that. So that, let's, I can't believe this. I interviewed you, Patty, about, I don't know how many years ago now it is.
Nine.
And I remember the thing that struck me. I said, I can't believe this, the number of things going on in that family resource center. You know, babies and food and it just reminds me of something that you mentioned a little earlier. We were talking off air. Ebony was mentioning a mother sitting there, and she didn't have two arms. She had four. And somehow that's what's going to... Or she made those two arms look like she had four. And that's one of the things that I think many men, and I'm certainly one of them, we're sort of... we stand in awe. We just can't believe it. How do they do that? And we're... my only... way out is to suggest that in my case my feminine side shines through and I can do two things at once. But anyway, let's get back to this community garden, because I can't believe how our time is going so quickly. Let's talk a bit now. We've got the garden, we've got water, we have programs, because they're coming from, and you have now, you have, I understand, you have in your new at Harborfront, you have a community kitchen or a...
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about it. What's there? Is it a... give me some details.
It's just a beautiful kitchen with some space for... so it looks like your family kitchen, but bigger, right? Oh, it's not like industrial at all. It's It's like a family space. Beautiful view of Mount Ida. We love our new location.
Oh, good.
So it's got the stove and the dishwasher and those types of things.
That to you seem so normal. To us men, some of us, and we got to learn how to operate that dishwasher and how the things have to be put in the dishwasher properly. Okay, now we've got to worry about volunteers. We've got to get people to this. So, Patty, tell me a little bit about that, and then we'll jump over back to Ebony.
Well, the very first year, the first thing that we, the whole goal was that groups from all over the community, like schools and students, and didn't matter who you were, where you were, you could come up and be there at the garden at any time. And that would eliminate the real need for volunteers. So, of course, that worked, sort of caught traction the second year more. The first year, I would say Ebony, myself, Rhonda Faulkner, we were it, Chris, John, all these people, Leslie.
This was in 2015?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, then, okay. So we need way more volunteers. We always do. Yeah. The weeds don't stop, right? First of it's the planting and getting the ground ready, and then seed time, and then maintenance, and then we have harvest. So whatever part of gardening you like, I mean, you have an opportunity to come up and do that, right?
Go ahead, Ebony. You wanted to add to that, the volunteers and how you get them?
We always love volunteers. We want everyone to feel welcome and to come, whether they have any experience or not. And, whatever they can contribute, we are so welcome to have. At the beginning, though, we sort of envisioned the space being like having these multi-purposes. So we wanted to engage, because it's about food security, but it's also about community and being with each other outdoors and learning from each other and laughing together. So we wanted people to feel welcome to come up as, you know, an individual in the community with no ties to any programming. We wanted our programs at the Family Center to engage with it. But then we also wanted it to be a site for agencies to run their own programming through. And so we did presentations. Leslie and I walked around to all the, you know, at different times presented at all these different service agencies.
Like at the farmer's market?
More like at CLBC and at... all the different social service agencies who engage with programming for our community and have participation. And we envisioned opening up the space to them to bring their participants and utilize the space in the way that it suits them. So CMHA engaged a lot. There was a
immigration
lot of
settlement services.
Yeah, a lot of participation.
I know you like abbreviations, but tell us that's the Canadian Mental Health Association.
Yes.
Yes, and I understand they have their own programs in-house, and then they organize a group to go out to the community garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds wonderful. And does it work?
Yes, and this year was a little different, of course.
Oh, yeah, well, let's...
let's talk pre-pandemic.
Yeah, because it definitely, COVID put a big damper on things this year. I know that, and I think it scared some people.
Yes.
So I didn't really personally see the true potential of this garden, but I think it's definitely there. So let's go back to...
And I'll just make a plug. It would be probably the safest place to be during COVID would be at that garden working outside and lots of room to social distance. I'm sorry, I lost your question, Steve.
No, that's fine. It's all about volunteers and how to get...
Oh, yeah, volunteers, yes. Because you can take food too at home with you if you wish from the harvest.
And every day, every day you go, bring a bag, take two bags home. There's so much food comes out of it.
And the tools are there. We got gloves and everything. So this is probably time for a shout out to Buckerfield.
Yeah,
hey?
Buckerfield.
Yes. I wanted to mention that too, because I'm glad you brought it up, because they have been very generous.
Yes, they have.
And instrumental in making this work. And again, COVID, the damage is unfortunate, but we're back now, and you were getting quite a few people there, and you were growing lots of stuff, and they were taking some of it home, and was the excess, where was it going?
Well, this year it went to Second Harvest.
And other years to the Salvation Army.
And Second Harvest and our community kitchen. But our kitchen wasn't... so we did take some produce to give to some families weekly, a box if they couldn't make it. Because we do have issues of people who aren't able to get to the garden, which is another piece of the story.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ladies, we've got this garden going. We've got a piece of land. We've got some water. You've got lots of volunteers. And now let's talk a little bit about, you just mentioned it, Patty. You talked about tools. Where did they come from?
Buckerfields, we got some grant money, so we were able to purchase some tools. And then they, Buckerfields being Buckerfields, and their philosophies on all their, community collaborations, jumped right in and have been very generous ever since.
Yeah, they that's good. So I noticed when I was there, there's quite a few tools. So
yes,
yeah, they've been very generous. And I'm sure some people maybe donated some. Were there some donations?
I'm sure that that's happened. We did.
Yeah, there was some.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
And probably this year, because like you said, Melanie Bennett really took this program and pushed it to that. Like, we started out with a little patch of dirt and built it, and then what I seen this year was what I dreamed 5 years mm-hmm. ago the garden would look like, and Melanie just made that space zen. Right?
I call her a miracle worker to her face, but she does somehow get, she's very well organized,
yes.
incredibly well organized, and she gets a lot of people out there. And even in the face of COVID, with all these restrictions, piles of gloves, so everybody's going to put some, and washing mm-hmm. stations, two of them, as I recall, and... yeah, and getting volunteers. Of course, that's the other part of it is, and here's something that I want to just look. How do you teach? Who's doing the teaching? Chris, I met him. He's more reserved type person. Was he doing some of the teaching?
Yeah, he was. He was up there every
definitely
week.
Definitely teaching
we
us.
We had a weekly newsletter and then monthly that let everyone... we'd send out to all the agencies and anyone on our mailing list. And it had the times that Chris was up there to provide hands-on instruction. And then there was workshops on there. And
That's what it's all about, teaching. Teaching people. It sometimes, for some of us, I think we forget there are lots of details in gardening. It's not just throwing a bunch of seeds on the ground in the soil and, expecting them to grow, throw a little water on. For each type of plant... there are different, what are we going to call that, details about, give me some of those details from your experience, Ebony, about some of the things that you need to be very careful about planting. Some of them you're actually planting little plants, little shoots, little, what do we call them, you grow them indoors. And
the seedlings?
Seedlings, bedding, thank you, yeah.
Or bedding plants, yeah.
Bedding plants.
A lot of the garden... we planted from seed on the site. That being said, we did have some local nurseries donate, I'm glad I had the opportunity to say. We had so many generous nurseries, and citizens would email me and say, I have 15 tomato plants, seedlings that I want to donate, and they would just drop them off at the garden and they would get planted. So it kind of came from everywhere, and we did have the schools bringing their few classes, brought kids up, and they were really good at planting the seed. They loved the detail.
We loved it because you go up and you could see where the adults had planted perfectly straight rows, and then it was like, yay, there was the fun. And you just have like food growing in its own little unique row. It was awesome. That's what we love about it, right?
Well, if children enjoy that when they're children, then as they grow older, they're going to feel much more secure and confident about growing food and a garden. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people that I didn't phone. I just talked to Melanie because I grow a lot. It's always way too much, and I have a little greenhouse. Gonna have to replace it, but anyway, I took up some, as I recall, some broccoli, and they wanted to see what Brussels sprouts looked like. So I think I had at least one or two Brussels sprouts and a few other things. But I cannot believe the number of tomato plants they had.
Oh no!
Tell me a little bit about tomato plants, there, Ebony.
Salsa.
Oh, there's amazing tomatoes. I remember I used to go out there with my kids and we would just, we'd pull weeds and eat tomatoes the whole time. They're amazing. They grow. We always had a large variety in there. Our goal was we would plant organic heritage seeds. So interestingly, some of the vegetables that came out of that garden did not look like the garden veggies you bought at the store. We had, you know, purple carrots and yellow tomatoes.
And of course, the taste
is amazing.
Tell me a little bit about the taste of carrots coming out of that garden.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing. My kids would literally walk through with fistfuls of carrots, kale, and strawberries. Just fistfuls. Dirty. Didn't want, you know, just right in there.
It was. Well, I remember that book. I keep telling people about them. It was called Let Them Eat Dirt, and it's actually healthy. Not that they go around eating dirt, but if it gets into their mouth, it contains billions of very important bacteria. Which brings me to another thing, which is manure. Mm-hmm. Now, not only do they have a pile of manure there, where did it come from? Anybody know?
We get milfoil, or we did. I'm not sure if it's still going. We had milfoil brought up, and we have compost, of course, and we have sort of connected with some local tree trimmers who bring up. Originally, we were paying. See, these are like the ways that you sustain a project like this. Originally, we were paying to get wood chips brought up and dumped on site. And then, you know, down the road, we ended up connecting with a bunch of the local tree companies. And of course, they were more than willing to take up their chipped wood and dump it on our parking lot versus elsewhere. So now we just have this, you know, this local connection, and it just keeps coming.
What do you call this where all these things come together? It's like nature. What do you call that? That's not ecological. It's more than that. It's, you know, you mentioned a whole bunch of things like manure, but you got milfoil. Eurasian milfoil is actually harvested. Right, I live in Canoe, and I can see the guy out there, and they harvest it, but it doesn't go to waste. No, we're going to put that on a garden because it's actually very important. It contains minerals. If you can get some stuff from the coast, seaweed, it's even better. Apparently, it has lots. But that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You talk about, it's called, what do they call that? Permaculture. Mm-hmm. It's a type of permaculture because you're not wasting anything. Nature doesn't waste anything. She seems to know what she's doing. And then you mentioned mulch, because I can remember taking wheelbarrows full of mulch and then putting them between the rows. And, of course, what? Tell me all about mulch. What does mulch do, Ebony?
Oh, God, I wish Chris was here. No.
Well, maybe we'll have him in one day. Yeah, listen, this is going to develop into, I think, we have Gardening Hints by Jean Jenks. Have you met Jean?
I haven't met her, but...
You've heard her?
Yes,
I have. Well, I talked to her the other day, and she wants to do some more and getting ready for spring. But anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted you, Ebony. Tell me a little bit about what you know then that sort of rubbed off from Chris. If we could get him in here, we'd have him.
Well, my understanding, and again, I was never the gardener. I looked at the garden as this beautiful social project and opportunity for education. I loved it. But the mulch does a number of things. It provides nutrition for the soil, but also we would cover our rows around all our plants with mulch, which would keep the weeds down and keep the moisture in the soil. So you're not getting that. Our little drips of water were not evaporating. They were staying down in the root of the plant. And also, in a big windstorm, we weren't losing our soil, right? Our soil was staying on site.
Yes.
Which is also important.
Yeah, and so it keeps the moisture in, and it and actually over time, mind you, it's wood, but over time it breaks down and becomes
nutritious.
You know, it's just like compost it, but they call it mulch because it lasts longer. Often you see it made out of husks and things like that. I stand in awe, and I love that garden because first of all, it becomes, as you said, now COVID has changed a lot, but it becomes a meeting place.
Yes, and a perfect meeting place if we're still in pandemic next year. Like yoga groups could go up there and do yoga. Because if you haven't been to the community teaching garden, it is one of the most beautiful locations mm-hmm. and views in our community.
And it's enormous.
And there, and the bus does go to right across the street, like mm-hmm. the transit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to do meditation groups and not even do gardening up there, feel free.
And I should mention
and
Rick.
And pluck a weed or two.
I should mention Rick, because I know Melanie would like to. He's a guy that has a recycling-type business, where, and he was mowing the lawn. I think I mowed it once or twice, where they do have yoga right in front of the mm-hmm. garden. Mm-hmm. And you talk about a serene place, mm-hmm. a place that serenity is palpable. Mm-hmm. You know, you can actually feel. A couple of other things I'd like to mention before we go on. The next food conversation, so that's the food conversation, that's the other Friday with Warren Bell, is on Friday, February the 19th at 9 a.m. And his guest again will be Andrea Gunner. She is a, I think she's an economics and agronomist and a number of other things. And it's going to be about food sovereignty, more on food sovereignty and what has been lost and what we might and must get back. So that'll be February the 19th at 9 a.m. The next show of More Food for Thought is going to be February the 26th. That's Friday, February the 26th at 9 a.m. And our guests will be David Askew, Dave Wallace, the operations manager, and Brad DeMills. Now, this promises to be rather interesting. And Warren Bell will be hosting that. I'm going to be helping out. And they're going to talk about the strengths and challenges of local retail food outlets and all the things that go with that, local sourcing, transportation, storage, etc. Those are just some of the topics. I want to also put in a plug for Melanie Bennett and her leading the charge and organizing people. And there's lots of people involved of the Coldest Night of the Year, which really all the money raised goes to help things like food security and helping those and with programming. I wish Melanie was here, because I'm just touching on all the things they can do. They have a fairly ambitious goal this year, but please go online. That's CNOY, coldestnightoftheyear.org, CNOY.org. If you're not online, the telephone number is 1-877-743-3413, and you can sign up. And we're also the Shuswap Food Action Society's involved. They've got a few places there. And there's a nice story, but we don't have time to. The co-op was very generous with food with friends, especially with respect to propane. So what the Action Society is asking you to is to fuel up at the co-op at the top of the hill. Actually, their price is pretty good for gas. So fuel up there, especially for the month of February. And they're calling it Fuel Up February at the co-op and support the Shuswap Food Action Society, because they have an account there, the Action Society. It is, write this down now, 101001. That's their account number. So if you put that in when they ask you for an account number, the Food Action Society will get the benefit of that in the spring when the co-op has its rebates. So now back to my guests, and I've got a little bit of paper in front of me here, but I want to get back to Patty and Ebony, because they're the experts. All right, ladies, let's get down to some really interesting stuff here about this garden, this community garden, and we were talking about volunteers, and I'm imagining this big, it's just about an acre, and believe me, I know it's fairly big, because I did a fair bit of rotor tilling. And I've got a rotor tiller, rear tine type. And so what are some, let's just talk about some. It blows me away when I saw the picture. And that's the problem with radio. We can't show a picture of that great big, the amount of food that they gave to Second Harvest. So Ebony, let's start with you. Let's talk mm-hmm. about some of the vegetables grown there that you, in your mind's eye, you can describe them. And if there were some particular either difficulties or things that barriers they overcame in order to plant them. Could you think of any?
We had potato beetles.
Oh, yeah. Potatoes. The potato beetles love us.
Yeah, because we're organic.
We're battling them. We put the kids in charge of them with a little plastic bucket and they would each walk along the rows, picking potato bugs off of the potato plants, putting them in the little buckets. We planted all sorts. We had Buckerfields. We purchased some fruit trees. We had fruit and nut trees planted first year.
What kind?
We had a grafted tree that had, I think it was apple, pear. We had a straight apple. We had a walnut tree. I can't remember.
And they,
exactly.
I don't
we
think they really made it through the last.
They didn't thrive.
Didn't thrive. So fruit trees would be lovely.
They would have been down at the end in that. And
We had
them
along
on
the side of the fences. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I know there's some raspberries growing
there. I think
there.
The deer liked them.
The deer really liked
them. Yeah, that was a bit of a problem.
We do have deer fencing. Rona, actually, another supporter, helped us to put in the deer fencing. And a big group of volunteers went up and extended our fence line, which helped.
Deer are pretty, they know how to get through things.
Yeah.
And, good old nature. But we find ways of either putting up a fence or there are other things. I had trouble with deer and I found this. It was at, I think it was at Buckerfields, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. It smells like awful, like urine. Lynx urine or something, and the deer just do not like. But again, that means somebody has to spray this stuff, and it doesn't smell very nice, but it works. They stay away. And so strawberries, I know they have some gooseberries.
Yes.
Yeah. Raspberries.
Raspberries, gooseberries.
And some other.
I'm trying to picture it.
I know. And it's different every year, right? The design is always different.
Yes.
So we grow certain things amazing up there. Tomatoes do so well. Zucchinis also, squash.
Beans.
Oh, yeah. And
peas.
Those,
corn.
What do you call that family? Pumpkins, squash, zucchini. Mm-hmm. And, of course.
Orbs?
Is that the orb family? I don't know.
I don't know.
But, boy, they had quite a selection.
Yes.
And they had the blacks. What is it called? Keep the moisture in and the weeds down. Black, it's like a gardening landscape cloth or something they call it. And they even grew corn.
Yes.
Yeah,
corn is, and they, I remember because they said, take a couple of ears because nobody was taking it. So if we can organize, I think, as I say, COVID just changed everything. People were a little afraid, I think.
Yes, they were.
They were afraid to go out there, and I think that's another factor. And the tomatoes. Oh, I want to mention, because I was those to hold the tomatoes, because they're not all, and I've got to make this correct, indeterminate or determinate. In other words, they put a pole in. Where did they get those poles from?
Well, we purchased some, and some were donated.
I think a lot were donated from Home Hardware.
Yeah, Home Hardware, and I think Buckerfields also. Yep. We had cages donated by...
I remember the cages for sure.
Yeah, by citizens and also by local nurseries. Everyone's kind of given, right? Like it's truly,
truly a community
collaboration.
Effort. Yeah, cooperation. Yeah. And what that does is it strengthens the ties, doesn't it? Tell me a little bit about that, Patty. I think.
One of the things this year with the volunteers, I'll give a shout out to the Shuswap Rotary because they showed up weekly. I think Sundays they were trying for, but they would come out weekly and help out. So that was quite lovely because people were fearful to go. So
yeah. So. So if Chris wasn't there, I know Melanie was
the guru.
She was the guru and teaching people and cajoling people and suggesting and putting up little signs.
Yeah.
Okay, that needs weeding.
I love the signs. They were fantastic.
Yeah, because this row needs to be weeded and this row needs to be planted. And
it was perfect.
It is. It's like, I don't know how do you describe it. It's one of those things that, it's quite...
It evolved into what we were dreaming and visioning, is what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, and the lovely sign.
Yes.
The beautiful sign. We have to thank the Shuswap Middle School for doing
the
some
sign.
Students up there.
They designed that rainbow sign?
Yeah, yeah, they designed and painted it. Yeah. The plywood was donated as well.
Oh my!
Yeah, they they took that project on and did a beautiful job.
I think this is a lesson for all of us that, and I want you to tell me a little bit about this, Patty, a lesson to all of us of how you can dream and your dream can come true.
If you got a vision, go for it and be willing to be flexible. It doesn't have to be what you thought.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Mothers can always just come up with something.
Yeah, just go with it. You know, my theory is the bounce and roll model.
Yeah. So I know this sounds kind of almost out of place, but why should we care about a community garden?
Oh, perfect. Great segue, Steve. So food is, to me, the language of love, truly. And if your community isn't fed, your community isn't healthy. And if your community isn't healthy, then none of us can thrive. Because if people aren't fed, we'll just take a classroom as a small model. And there's a family that can't afford food and their children are going to school and they're hungry. We all know the behaviors that come with that. Your child that's being fed is in that classroom. So are they getting the education that they could have if everyone had the equal food and nutrition, right? We have food programs in school, etc., but it's still not enough.
No, it never is.
We need food. We need to feed our neighbors and feed ourselves healthy so we can have a healthy community. To me, food is just the foundation. Healthy food.
Healthy food, nutritious food. And of course,
which is delicious, by the way.
And we've got programs, I hope, in the future here describing how important it is to eat local food because you're getting more nutrition. When it has to travel, it loses some of its, and where it's grown, if it's grown in a factory farm, let's face it, I don't think it has the same level
of quality. And I think one thing we can thank the pandemic for is we all really got to see that in March, the piles and piles of acres of wasted food that couldn't go to produce or to production. And we started shopping more local. I think we all did and wanted to support our community locally. So we shop local. And I think we all learned it just tastes better and it feels better, right?
Yeah. Do you want to add to that, Ebony?
Can I just say that there's a myth out there that people say that vegetables and organic food is too expensive to eat, and I challenge that, and I can show anyone if they want to connect with me on how to purchase vegetables, etc., economically, if you have to purchase.
Yeah, and there's a little secret in there. I hate to keep cutting in because you're the experts, but I've been to Nelson. I lived there, and once we have established, and we already do, we're all well on our way, a good farming community,
yes,
and you have a place to sell your produce, prices will go down.
Absolutely.
And, of course, again, the other factor is quality, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So even if you pay 1 or 2 cents more at the end of your lifespan, so when you're 50 and when you're getting closer to my age, which is even older, thank goodness for nutritious food because I'm healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just looking at the time.
Yeah.
I have to, but I want to ask you one last question for both of you. Excuse me. What do you aspire to now? What's next on your dreaming? What are you dreaming about now? I'm going to start with you, Ebony, please. What are you dreaming about now?
I'm dreaming about the garden becoming more central, and I'm dreaming, and I'm not the only one. I know there's lots, I've had the conversations, Melanie included, Patty, Serena, that the community has food grown in the pathways, you know, along these unused edges, you know, just having access to healthy, seasonal, local food if you need it. And if that could happen, I think it would be wonderful.
Yes. Okay. More central. How about programs, Patty? What more can we... Well, let's ask about programs and volunteers. Go ahead.
Well, and I want to throw in one of my dreams is to get... Ebony and I really worked hard on a gleaning program because there's a lot of food in our community already. And I think this is where our conversation started about the teaching garden. We'd really like the gleaning. That's going to take extreme volunteer effort. But it's a great thing. And
would
so,
you describe gleaning? Because some people are not really aware of what it is.
So basically, as I understand, gleaning is a group of volunteers goes to an orchard, picks the produce. The pickers get a third, the community gets a third, and the owner gets a third is how I understand it works.
Yes, okay. And it's basically picking up where they've already harvested, right?
So like any if excess. You had excess and you need someone to come in pick, or someone has an elderly parent and they have all this fruit trees, will come and pick, they get a percentage, community gets a percentage.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Ebony, we're running out of time, but I'll give you 20 seconds. Do you want to add something?
In terms of the gleaning program, I would just say that it's one of those opportunities. The food's there. If we can collaborate and coordinate people to pick and that food can be utilized instead of wasted, that would be the goal.
Thank you very much, ladies. You've been listening to More Food for Thought with Patty Thurston as one of my guests and Ebony Bardell, both from the Family Resource Center. This is More Food for Thought. It's CKVS. And thank you very much for listening.